Welcome to Breaking It Down with D'Anthony, with your host, Devin Anthony. A lot to talk about today. Sports world, always a lot going on as usual. I have a special guest to join me today. He is actually committed to a very good D3 school, Eastern University. His name's Diesel Fiore. Tell him about, a little bit about yourself, Diesel.
I'm a goalkeeper at Bishop Gorman High School, and I play for Heat FC. Just one of those guys that likes to get down and dirty and will make the saves that need to be made. So, yeah, I'm very blessed with the situation I'm in, and I can't wait to get to college.
And now Diesel's played a little bit of basketball in his career. Obviously, he's a very good soccer player and very knowledgeable. Sure. Very knowledgeable about sports. So I'll have a great show for you guys today. And we're going to start off with talking about the NBA. NBA second half of the season. All-Star game was a great game. Really fun to watch. It was really fun to finally see Steph Curry and LeBron on the same team. Damian Lillard hit the final three threes. He was insane. You already know how it is. Dame time. I think he's one of the better point guards in the league. But, second half of the season, it's going to be really fun and exciting to watch. You got some really close races in both the Eastern and Western Conference at the top and for those final playoff spots. But let's talk about Blake Griffin coming to the Nets. You know, he's way past his prime, but I still think he's a great contributor to whatever team he's going to be on. Obviously, he's had problems with his knees in terms of, injuries with the Pistons. Hasn't been great there. They finally bought him out. Didn't seem like he really wanted to be there anymore, and he's now signed the vet minimum with the Nets. So I think, no doubt, that probably makes the Nets the clear favorite to win the East. What do you think?
Oh, easily. I mean, with the three they have, with KD, Harden, and Irving, I mean, they already dominate the league right now, and then just adding a bruiser like Blake Griffin, it's gonna be very easy for them to win games. They just got to stay healthy and keep all those four just willing to play.
So I thought, in terms of the teams that can contend, the Nets in the East, you got Philly, Milwaukee, Boston. Which of those three teams do you think probably has the best chance to contend Brooklyn in the East?
I think it's a toss-up between Milwaukee and Philly. I mean, the 76ers have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, who are both going off recently. And, I mean, we all know about Giannis in the Bucks. So it's going to be tough. It's going to come down to who can make it to that Eastern Conference final game and who can just play the better basketball.
Yeah, I'm with you. I definitely think of those three teams, Celtics probably have the least chance of contending. You know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, they're both All-Star this year, I think, obviously, deservingly. But Boston's, they've struggled on the road. They're 7-13 on the road. They showed in their most recent matchup against the Nets last night that if they don't shoot well from three, they only shot 32%, then, they probably can't win big games. Not a team that I think necessarily can rely on their defense. They're young, but, I mean, they do have guys that step up on that team. But, again, I don't think that if that team's not shooting well.
Kemba Walker, I mean, he hasn't been performing as what he used to be at the Hornets. I mean, the guy is really good, trust me. But, I mean, with what he's been putting out at the Celtics, I mean, it doesn't look like his past self.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Celtics fan, you're praying that Kemba Walker can make a turnaround for your team and can start leading at that point guard position. And if he continues to shy away in these big games, I don't think Boston could really compete at a high level in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, so I think between Milwaukee and 76ers, I think the 76ers are my favorite to try and contend the Nets. You know, Joel Embiid's in his fifth season. I think he's pretty much hit his prime, and I think he'll win MVP this year. He's averaging 30 points. He's averaging 30 points and 11.5 rebounds a game. I think he's easily the best big man in the league right now. He's shooting 52% from the field, 41.5% from three. And he's got a pretty solid team around him. You know, as you said earlier, Ben Simmons is a pretty solid player. I think he's honestly a little bit underrated, even though he was the first overall pick in the draft a couple years ago. But I don't think he...
You also have to remember, he was injured for his first, I think it was two or three seasons, so...
Yeah, he didn't play a single game his first season. So when he came back for second season, he won Rookie of the Year because technically he was a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Sixers team is a really strong team. I think even though they're first in the East right now, they're still somewhat extremely underrated, and people are definitely sleeping on them. They're 25-12, best record in the East. Brooklyn's half a game behind them at 25-13. You know, they got Tobias Harris. He's averaging 20 a game. Simmons is averaging 16, 8, and 7. Dwight Howard, strong off the bench. He was a great offseason signing for the Sixers. Seth Curry, brother of Steph, he's shot the ball well for Philly this season. So I think, you know, Philly's definitely – people are sleeping on Philly. I know they're first in the East, but I think people – they're definitely getting slept on. And then you got the Bucks. They're third in the East right now. But I doubt that they'll beat the Nets in a playoff series because, as we've seen in the last couple of years with Giannis in the playoffs, he just lacks that leadership. And, you know, the Bucks aren't really a great team on the road either. They're 8-9 on the road this year. So I think
he also doesn't have that much of a team around him. I mean, yeah, you can say Middleton's a good power forward, or he's a good small forward wherever he ends up. But, I mean, there's got to be more guys. I mean, and plus Giannis can't shoot the three, so that limits to what he can play. So he's definitely needs a team around him, and that he doesn't have it right now.
Exactly, and I think the Bucks have decent shooters. Obviously, Jrue Holiday's been a great point guard for them. He was a good pickup in the offseason for them. But when you let's say you have a playoff series between the Nets and the Bucks, then I don't think there's any defense, regardless how good they are, that can legitimately hold the Nets under 110, 115 points.
Agreed.
Yeah. You know, they're averaging 116 points per game. That's the highest in the East. Like, you have Harden, Irving. Harden's won an MVP. KD's won an MVP. Blake Griffin's been an All-Star a couple times. And even DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan's been an All-Star a couple times. Like, that is probably one of the best starting fives. If we're not going to see that starting five for a while, I don't think, because of injuries. But if that's the starting five in the playoffs, that is by far the best starting five I think we've seen in the NBA in a long time, maybe since that Warriors team a couple years ago. So that brings brings up the question, which team do you think was better, the Warriors team when they had KD or Nets team currently with KD? Which one do you think is better?
Again, it's the same thing as I was saying with the Philly Milwaukee debate. I mean, the Warriors a couple of years ago, they were a strong team, and they put a lot of games away that were needed to be won. And this Nets team is doing the same thing they were. So it's gonna, in my opinion, I think the Nets are a lot stronger. It's probably roughly, as you were saying, the best starting five we will see play. And it's going to be very difficult to beat them. And especially with prolific scorers like Harden and KD and a terrific ball handler like Kyrie Irving. So it's going to be fun to watch. But, yeah, I definitely think the Nets are the better team.
And I think maybe the Warriors team was a little bit more entertaining in terms of, you know, how great of a three-point shooting team they were with Steph and Klay, and even KD was shooting the ball well. But I think if you put those two teams against each other, I think the Nets win. I think, you know, maybe you could argue that the Warriors had a little bit better depth, but just the sheer star power this Nets team has with Kyrie, Harden, KD, and you can even argue Blake Griffin now, I think, you know, they look almost unstoppable. And I'm a pretty big Lakers fan, and it hurts to say that if we end up against the Nets in the finals, I do not think that LeBron and AD can beat the big three of Kyrie, Harden, and KD. So, and I mean, the Lakers got to worry about winning the West first. They even want to make the finals. There's some really good teams in the West this year. You know, you got the Phoenix Suns, who are currently sitting second in the West at 25-11. I think they're probably the dark horse in the West this year. They have the second best defense in the West, only behind the Lakers. Devin Booker was an All-Star this year. He's averaging 25 a game and put up an impressive 35 and win over Portland last night. Chris Paul was an All-Star this year. He's averaging 16 points, 9 assists. DeAndre Ayton, who was former number one pick, he's a solid defender and rebounder for the Suns, and I think he's very important for them in the post. But it's impressive. The Suns are 8-2 in the last 10 games. Not a lot of people realize that.
They're on a five-game winning streak. So, I mean, streaks don't mean a lot, but, I mean, they definitely do help with momentum.
At this stage of the season, too, you got to have big winning streaks like that. And this Suns team looks pretty unstoppable just because they have a really good balance of vets and young players as well. And I think that's a perfect mix you need to compete in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree.
And then in front of them, you got the Jazz, the 27-9. They've lost just two games at home this year. They've gone on a couple of huge winning streaks. I think they're also one of the deeper teams in the league. You know, Donovan Mitchell's averaging 25 a game. Rudy Gobert is averaging 14 points per game and 13 rebounds. Mike Conley was an All-Star this year, averaging 16 a game, 6 assists. You know, they've got three, I think, deservingly all-stars in that team. They're not maybe the most entertaining team, but they play basketball the right way. And, you know, they've got a really solid team down the roster. They've got really good shooters in Bogdanovich and Joe Ingles. Jordan Clarkson, he's a great contributor off the bench. He can win Sixth Man of the Year this year. He's averaging 18 a game. And he's definitely, you know, completely transformed his game since his Lakers days. And, like, it's hard to believe that same player played for the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, they're only 12-7 on away games. So, I mean, winning away is very vital, especially, like, late in the season. So, you can see that the Jazz are the clear favorites. But, I mean, like you were saying, being a Lakers fan, I mean, you never can count out LeBron. It's the same thing with Tom Brady. You can't bet against Brady. So, you never know. It's going to come down to who wants him more.
I'm right there with you. And the Lakers are, you know, they're letting up the least amount of points per game in the West, so they're still getting it done defensively, even without AD, who's been out for the last 9 games. But you gotta, you know, I heard Colin Coward a couple weeks ago, who said he doesn't think that Anthony Davis is a valuable player, and I couldn't disagree more. The Lakers are 3-6 in their last 9 games without AD. Like, this dude is special. And I think without AD, the Lakers don't even get past the first round of the playoffs last year. So,
I agree with that. I mean, a big body guy that can shoot the three, rebound, and handle the ball. I mean, what more do you want from a guy that's a center as well? And, I mean, you don't see that as often from centers that can handle and do all these things that point guards do. So it he is a big help when it comes to handling the ball when LeBron is sitting on the bench.
And it shows. The Lakers are in their worst slump, and since they've got Anthony Davis. You know, they don't have great big men to fill in for AD when he's out, which I think makes him such a valuable piece for the Lakers. You know, LeBron's still going to be LeBron. He's still the GOAT. I mean, you can argue between him and MJ, but we're not going to talk about that right now. But he's still been leading this more depleted Lakers team. He's averaging 26 a game, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. I think he's probably runner-up behind Embiid for MVP right now. Which is funny because if he's runner up again for MVP this year, that'll be his 5th time in his career. You know,
as a runner up.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yep. So I think, you know, LeBron will definitely start kicking it into gear a little bit more now the second half of the season has started. You know, it's not impossible. The Lakers are only 3.5 games behind the Jazz right now. It's not impossible for them to try and catch that first seed. But that brings up the question, how much does that first seed actually matter this year in the playoffs? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think it matters. I mean, looking at the playoff picture right now, I mean, the one's going to play the 8, and we all know how that seeding works. I mean, playing the 6 seed with a strong Trailblazers team, I mean, it's not going to come down to the 8, 7, 6, and 5. It's going to come down to the top 4. So, I mean, you're playing these teams consistently, and but yeah, as I was saying, it's going to come down to the top 4, and that's who you need to worry about. Playing these 5, 6, 7, and 8 teams aren't going to be as big, but those are still must-win games.
And realistically, you know, if I'm the Lakers, I'm not going to force AD into trying coming back this year and go against how much time he needs to recover from his injury, because as long as they stay in that top 4, I think they should be fine in the playoffs, because, you know, obviously it's great to have that first seed and to have home court advantage throughout, but there's no fans. I doubt there'll be fans for the playoffs this year. Maybe I'm wrong. There might be. But without any fans, I don't think it really plays a factor that much. And if you're on the road or if in your own stadium.
Exactly. I mean, the one thing I would say about playing away, I mean, if you're playing, like, let's say you're, as we are, the LA Lakers or whatever, and we play Chicago, that's a time change. So I think that's probably the only thing that is worrying, is that time change from a Pacific Standard to whatever the time change is in Chicago. So, but without fans, I mean, there isn't really much to do. I mean, fans carry momentum and they can help a team win games, but without them, it's just who's gonna play the better basketball and who wants to win the game.
These guys are pros. They're used to all conditions. But yeah. Playing without fans is something that is so unusual for so many of these guys. Like, LeBron's used to playing in front of 20,000 throughout his career in the playoffs. And, you know, the Lakers were still able...
And even in high school he was doing that.
Exactly.
I mean, the guy was well known.
And, you know, the Lakers were still successful in the bubble last year. They still won it all with no fans. I think maybe they had families in attendance for a couple of the games. But, again, you know, the Lakers are 11-8 at home, which is pretty bad. That's not very good at all. But they're 13-5 on the road. So that proves my point that I don't think it really matters if you're the first seed or the fourth seed in the playoffs this year. I think it's going to come down to who's playing the best basketball come playoff time.
I agree.
All right, moving on for basketball. We're going to talk a little about the NFL. Two of the highest-paid quarterbacks behind Mahomes. Now he's passed Deshaun Watson for the second highest-paid quarterback in the league. You got Dak Prescott, signed a four-year, $160 million contract this week.
Big money.
And there's a lot of people that argue, did he deserve that money? Is Dak actually a top-five QB in the league? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I believe he's a top five. He's got to be. I mean, the guy comes in taking over a team that Romo had for however long, and he just kept going. He didn't really stop where Romo left off. So it's good to see that he's getting paid, and you got to give the guy some credit. I mean, he's come back from some big deficits to help the Cowboys win big-time games.
Yeah, and he was looking like he was going to win MVP last year until he went down with that gruesome ankle injury. And, you know, if he has a great comeback season this year, obviously he can win comeback player of the year. I don't know if he can put up an MVP season this year, but I think he's definitely going to be a little bit more motivated, have that more drive now that he's been paid the big bucks.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, it's a huge contract. I'm not going to lie. You know, their owner is one of the, you know, more well-known owners, of course. Definitely a little bit outspoken, but you got to question how will cap space affect the Cowboys and who are they able to sign or re-sign. You know, Zeke's on a big contract. You got to worry about keeping your defense happy, and the defense was pretty poor last year for the Cowboys, one of the worst in the league. So, you know, if they're not able to keep some of their regular defensive guys that are leading on that side of the ball, and you're not able to, you know, sign more guys to help that depleted defense, then I don't know how much the Cowboys are actually be able to compete. You know, in those five games Dak played last year, it felt like every game was like 47-42. Like, as great as that offense was.
Shootout games where it's just strictly offense and zero defense.
Exactly. It's like as great as Dak is and as many points as he puts up, that defense isn't really helping him much. Like, that defense, I don't know if they're going to be able to sign anyone that's actually going to help. And so Dak's going to have to put up some huge numbers next year to lead that team. And there's a lot of Cowboys fans. I mean, there's always Cowboys fans that are delusional and think that they're going to win a Super Bowl. But, you know, Dak's on a four-year contract, and you got to think, can the Cowboys realistically win a Super Bowl in the next 4 years? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think they could. I mean, again, they signed him to a four-year contract. So, I mean, and he's, what, 28 right now? His contract's up when he's 32. I believe he's entering his prime, or he's almost about to exit in the 4 years he has. So I think with some of the players that they have right now, I think if they just keep going and forget about the year they just had and move forward, I think they have a good shot. And they got to do more about the run game. The O-line is struggling. I mean, Dak did roll out a lot last year, and Zeke barely put up any numbers to what he did in 2019 and 2018. So, I mean, the O-line's got to get some work done. The defense needs to pick it up. But, yeah, I'd say they could be their contender for the next 4 years.
Yeah, I think that's a strong take. And I can tell you who's not going to win a Super Bowl with this team is Deshaun Watson. It's a mess over there in Houston. And yesterday, surprisingly, you had Texans head coach David Coley. He said in a press conference that he thinks that Watson is definitely their guy, and he even claimed that Watson is committed to them as well, which, you know, I'm calling a little bit of BS on that. I'm not sure if that's actually going to go through. You know, Deshaun Watson is a very, very valuable quarterback to any team he ends up going to. He threw for the most passing yards in the league last year, and I think he's deservingly a top three highest paid quarterback in the league. You know, the guy is special. He knows how to win games, but the problem is he has zero, you know, he has zero hope in Houston. They lost DeAndre Hopkins. They've lost J.J. Watt to the Cardinals. Like, it's a mess there. There's no possible way I think they could win more than four or five games, even if he stays next year. And why would any
QB... As a Broncos fan, I'm hoping that the Broncos pick him up. I mean, don't get me wrong, Drew Lock, he's a good quarterback, but, I mean, if you get a guy like Deshaun Watson, you got to run with him.
But even for a team like the Broncos to trade for Deshaun Watson, you have to give up so much, like so much on your current team and so much for your future as well. Because you even saw how much even Matthew Stafford went for to go to the Rams. Like, I think the Rams gave up 3 draft picks plus Jared Goff. Just for Matthew Stafford, I think is probably past his prime now. So that definitely raises the question of how much Deshaun Watson is worth. So, you know, if he ends up getting traded, it's definitely going to be for a very hefty price just because of how valuable he is. You know, if he doesn't end up getting traded, he is stuck on contract until 2025, which you know, sucks for him. Way. Yeah. So even if he does end up staying, like, I don't, if you're Houston, I think you'd rather draft a quarterback, get some draft picks for the future than have an unhappy quarterback who might not even be playing to his highest potential because he's so unhappy with the team you've surrounded him with. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see these next couple months if Watson actually ends up staying or leaving. You know, as you said, Broncos would be great for them to trade for him, for the 49ers as a favorite. The Bears are still pushing for him. And even, I mean, there's rumors about Russell Wilson getting traded. I don't think anything will actually go through there. I think that's just the media trying to spark something up there.
Controversy.
Yeah, so I don't think anything will actually happen there. But I think there's, you know, it's looking like a little bit less likely for Wilson to get traded. But even if he does, I think he'll be a huge groundbreaking trade, something like we've never seen before.
Yeah.
All right, we're just gonna talk about UFC a little bit. What were your thoughts on Peter Yan's loss to Sterling off that illegal knee? Like, do you think that's, you know, just to give us some background, Sterling was definitely getting dominated. I think it was the third or fourth round, and he took that illegal knee to the face, wasn't able to return, tried to, but the guy was pretty badly concussed, and you can tell that he was emotional. You don't want to win that way, but he's still the champion. So, you know, we're not MMA fighters, but do you think if you're Sterling, are you happy with that win? Or do you feel, you know, or are you in Jan's case where you feel like that wasn't fair? Like, it wasn't that bad. He could have returned and he didn't deserve that.
You always have to look at the media and everyone saying that, he was acting. But at the end of the day, the knee, the watching it and seeing what happened, you can't really throw that knee there, especially with how close that is, and that knee's coming in real fast. So it's gonna leave some damage. If I was Sterling, I mean, it's bittersweet. I mean, you don't want to win like that, but hey, you're the champion and you're the guy that everyone wants to beat now. So, but I mean, Jan shouldn't have thrown that knee. And the ref did say that he was down. So, I mean, you can say that he was acting, or you can say he's a champ, but I mean, at the end of the day, a win's a win, and even if it's not the way you want to win, it's still put there in that category.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think Sterling deserves the win. I think you know, you shouldn't expect any fighter to return after what happened to him. That was a pretty violent knee to the face. So that's, I mean, as tough as you are, I don't care how tough you are, I don't know how many people can come back from that. So I think if you're Jan, you accept the loss, you look forward to the rematch. But if you're Sterling, you know, you did everything you could, you know. I think he deserves to be the champion. I know a lot of people disagree with me, saying, you know, he deserves an Oscar more than he deserves a UFC belt. But now, looking at the Adesanya fight, which is the main fight that night, you know, he took on a great challenge. He moved up a weight class, which isn't easy to do. He's already the champ in the middle weight class. He did lose to Jan Błachowicz. I mean, Błachowicz is the much bigger guy, a lot tougher. And because he kept Adesanya on the ground, Adesanya had no response to that and unfortunately lost. And, you know, that does break his perfect record. He was 20-0 going into that fight. But he said at the end of this press conference, "Dare to be great." And I've never agreed with something more than that. What did you think of that response from Adesanya after that tough loss?
I think it shows humility. It shows that he's human. I mean, as you were saying, he was 20-0 coming into that fight. And, I mean, he does pull out a loss, but he's moving up a weight class. Like, light heavyweights are tough hitters. And the guy he was fighting was a guy that likes to be on the ground and does a lot of ground movement. And Adesanya is a stand-up fighter. He's going to he doesn't like the ground. So I mean, it was a fight that was going to head, that was a good matchup for Adesanya. But yeah, it shows that he's very humble and he knows that what he needs to work on is his ground game. He can deliver big strikes, but if you put him on the ground, he's less effective.
Yeah, he's definitely one of the more likable fighters in the UFC. You know, he's such an entertaining guy, never gives up. And I honestly don't think he loses that much from this loss. He's still a champ. He was going to be a double champ. So I don't think he loses that much from this. And I think he just has to move on, you know, defend his title in the middleweight class if he needs to. But I would like to see a rematch between those two fighters again. I think we saw a great fight. He just got to defend himself better on the ground.
Most definitely.
All right, we're talking last couple of talking points today. We're talking about a little bit about Champions League and then finish with March Madness. So, you know, we're both big soccer guys. The Champions League's definitely a little bit more interesting this year. I think no fans in attendance definitely plays a factor. What do you think? What do you think about Dortmund's win against Sevilla? You know, they went 5-4 in the aggregate. Erling Haaland was a beast, and especially in that second leg, and that brings up the argument. Who do you think will be the better player once this is all said and done, you know, in the next 10 years, you know, Messi and Ronaldo, you know, obviously they're the two goats of their time, but they're starting to get older. They're starting to decline. So you got Mbappe, or Haaland. Who do you think will be the better player in, let's say, in the next 10 years?
No, it's going to be the same debate as Messi or Ronaldo. I mean, Erling Haaland, the guy, he's a big dude, big guy, loves to win the ball in the air, make the extra mile, and he's quick. I mean, you could put him as a prime Ronaldo. I mean, the guy can use both feet, likes to shoot from distance, and can score the headers. And then there's Mbappe, who's the quick touch, the guy that likes to hold up play, keep everyone in front of him, and make these little touches, and then go straight to goal and score. And it's going to be the same argument. I mean, with Messi and Ronaldo, we can argue both sides that Messi's the GOAT or Ronaldo's the GOAT. But, I mean, it's like I was saying, Erling Haaland's a beast in the air and can finish, and Mbappe's a quick youngster that can put the ball in the back of the net wherever he wants. So it's gonna be tough to see who's better in 10 years.
Yeah, and both Mbappe and Haaland have led their teams to move on to the Champions League quarterfinals. Meanwhile, you know, Messi and Ronaldo are both out after the round 16.
First time since 2005.
Yeah, you know, you had PSG beating Barcelona 5-2 on the aggregate, and then you had Juventus losing to Porto 4. I mean, it was 4-4 in the aggregate, but Porto ends up moving through because of the away goals. And I honestly hate that away goal rule, especially this year. I think they should have taken it away because you have no fans in attendance. It doesn't really play a factor. And now Porto goes through, even though it was tied on aggregate, just because they scored more away goals. Do you think UEFA should take that away? Or do you think, you know, with fans in attendance, they should keep it for next year? I think they definitely made a mistake this year. But what are your thoughts on that?
I think the ruling is that the away goal is the biggest goal. But it's so dumb, especially in this year. I mean, zero fans. It's not like you're getting heckled or the fans are being loud and you can't hear what's going on. I mean, when you watch it on TV, you can hear what everyone's saying. So there's nowhere to hide, basically. Like, you can't blame it on the crowd noise or something happening. It's all on the pitch. So I think this year they definitely should have taken it away. And then once everything started to calm down, they should bring it back. But, I mean, FIFA is doing the best they can, especially with the time of COVID. So I'm just very happy that we have Champions League back and we can watch the first and second legs again.
Yeah, and if you're Juventus, you're gonna make excuses that, okay, away goals, that's stupid, shouldn't have counted this year. But Ronaldo didn't step up when he needed to in that second leg, and you got to question that lack of leadership in that second leg. I mean, obviously,
gotta question his game knowledge. I mean, the guy jumped out of the wall. And he left Chesney, especially. I mean, we're both goalkeepers, and we both want our. And when we go up for free kicks, we want that wall to be strong. And when you watch it, the outside men, both, I forget who it is, they both jump, and then the inside men both fade away from it, and leaving Chesney completely wide open and no one helping him. So, I mean, you gotta question if Ronaldo is it coming down to the end of his time, or if he's or if he has a few more years in him.
And it honestly seems like he's starting to lose that passion he had for that game. When you look at that great highlight a couple of years ago when he came back and led Juventus in that great comeback win over Atletico. You know, they're down 2-0 in the aggregate. They came back, won 3-0 in that second leg and moved on. And you've never seen more passion and fire from the guy, but it just didn't seem like it was there either those legs against Porto. Like, he kind of shied away, and that same passion isn't there anymore. And, you know, you got to question, is it lack of passion? Is he kind of just in it for the money now? Like, I mean, the guy's, almost a billionaire, so I think he's fine with the money part. But obviously, you know, he still has love for the game. I think we'll definitely see him play in the 2022 World Cup. But I don't think we'll see him playing in Europe for more than the next 2 or 3 years, which honestly, you know, hurts to see as a soccer fan. But he turned his back away from a free kick that could have easily been blocked or saved. And, you know, I'm not going to blame Szczęsny, because, you know, you can't really expect that. You'd expect your wall to block that, but it just didn't seem like that same leadership or fire was there from him. Like, what do you think about that?
I mean, we can't blame it all on Ronaldo. I mean, there's 10 other players on the pitch that are trying to do the same thing and score and win the game. Like, for example, when we were going into extra time with Rebo skying the last shot, I mean, the guy had so much time. And I get, like, a couple of days ago, we scored a beautiful banger. I forget against who, but it was such a great shot. And I guess and one of the commentators even said it. They're like, they were talking about how he scored that goal, and he's like, oh, he sees it, the headline already, him scoring the game-winning goal against Porto. So, but, I mean, it's a team effort, and Juventus definitely could have come out a lot stronger. I mean, the aggregate going into the game was 2-1. It's a close game, so, I mean, you can't just let up there.
Yeah, I honestly think that Ronaldo is being held more accountable than Messi is being held accountable for Barca's loss. I think you expect Ronaldo to be more of a leader because of how big his presence is on games. You know, Messi's so crafty. He's so smart on the ball, but I don't think when this is all said and done, you compare the two careers. You know, I think they're both different players, so I hate to say that one's the GOAT over the other, but I think once this is all said and done, that Ronaldo will go down as the greater leader than Messi was. And that doesn't really have an effect on who's better. But I just think that's why maybe Ronaldo's being held a little bit more accountable than Messi is for not leading as much.
You also have to remember that Messi's had players build around him. Like, he's had Thierry Henry, he's had Suarez, Neymar, he's had countless players. And even in Argentina, he has Di Maria and Dybala. And Ronaldo doesn't really have that. I mean, yeah, you can argue he had Benzema and Bale when he was at Real Madrid, but the guy hasn't had a big team built around him. And as I said with Messi, how he had so many superstars, Portugal doesn't really have a lot of top class strikers besides Ronaldo. I mean, you could say Carisma is a brilliant player, but I think Portugal builds through their midfield, and Ronaldo's not really that star anymore. So I think Messi's always had this team built around him with so many superstars, and then Ronaldo's always been left on an island, so that's why people expect a lot more out of him.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. But personally, I would love to see those two guys go back to the Prem in the next couple of years. You know, maybe
that'd be amazing.
Maybe Messi going to reunite with Guardiola and City, Ronaldo going back to Man U. I mean, that'd be awesome. You know, speaking of the Premier League, you got Liverpool. They beat Leipzig 4-0 in aggregate, so they're through the quarterfinals. But they've been really bad in the Premier League for the last, you know, 10 games or so, and they've really declined. And they were so dominant last year, and, you know, they've definitely been hit really, really hard by injuries this year. You know, you have your two center backs go out. But, you know, even Sir Alex Ferguson at Man U, he went through so many injury crises and still got it done. And, you know, without a fully healthy team, I don't think Klopp can... You know, Klopp can't be that guy to coach a team that's depleted. You know, they still have really, really class players, but it's looked like they've declined so much in these last couple games. But I guess, you know, they still have a really good chance of making a really good run in the Champions League. They're in through the quarterfinals. So what do you think on Liverpool's form lately?
I think it's a plethora of things. I mean, with when Liverpool played City, Alisson had those two crucial mistakes, which led to goals. And then against Everton, the 2-0, the quick early goal, and then the late dagger. I think it comes down to leadership. They need to find a new leader, especially with Henderson out, getting injured with his quad, I believe it is. They just got to find a guy that can step up and lead this team. There isn't a lot of leadership on Liverpool right now. Like, when you watch them play, they look lost, and it saddens me because they are a strong side, and they can put away these games like what they did with RB Leipzig. But they just got to figure out the form and figure out their leader.
Yeah, and you know, the end of this race in the Champions League, I think, is going to be very exciting. But you know, speaking of things that are exciting, March Madness, it's my favorite time of the year. I love March Madness. Ooh, yes. Just because, you know, of how unexpected everything can be. You know, I love watching the NBA, but the NBA is sometimes, you know, a little bit too predictable, a little bit too structured, which is why what makes March Madness so great is how unpredictable it is and how many upsets you see in the tournament each year. You had a couple years ago, you had Virginia, number one seed, losing to UMBC, which is 16 seed, only time in history that's ever happened, and then they come back the next year and win the whole thing. So, like, that's what I love so much about March Madness. I think we're in for a great treat this year, and it's going to be even more deserving because we didn't even get to see it happen last year. So,
exactly. It's very anticipated.
You know, Gonzaga won their conference tournament. They're going into the big tournament undefeated as the one seed. And, frankly, I don't think anyone can come in their way. They're such a strong team throughout. You know, Jalen Suggs will probably be a top five pick in the draft. I know upsets are possible to any team on the tournament this year, but do you think Gonzaga are the clear favorites? Do you think someone could catch up to them?
Like you said, March Madness is wild. We had UMBC a couple years ago beat Virginia, the number one seed. Then we had Loyola Chicago make a beautiful Cinderella run.
And Loyola Chicago, they're an eight seed this year. They're actually a really good team this year.
Yeah. It's going to be wild. And the clear favorites are Gonzaga. I mean, coming into the tournament undefeated is practically unheard of. But when you look up their scores, I mean, they're beating teams by double digits consistently. Like, they I don't think they've won a game that wasn't double digits. So they're going to be a tough team to beat. Jalen Suggs is a guy that can run the floor, and he has the vision and he has the shot. I mean, the guy's a great all-around player, but you got to give it to the small forwards and the power forwards. Those guys are getting rebounds and digging up the missed shots and putting them back in for easy points. So it's gonna be great to see. Hopefully there is a team to upset them. I personally like the upset. I like to root for the underdog, but I won't be shocked if Gonzaga wins the whole thing.
Yeah, I would bet a lot of money to say that either Gonzaga or a team in the Big Ten will win it. And the Big Ten has been so dominant this year. You have Illinois as the third ranked team in the country, Michigan at 4, Iowa at 5, Ohio State at 9, and Purdue at 20. Like, I don't think
Purdue just lost too. They just lost to Ohio State in their Big Ten game.
Yeah, and I don't think we've ever seen a conference be this dominant in the AP poll. And you know, I think, you know, Illinois and Michigan will both get one seeds. Iowa and Ohio State will probably get two seeds. Purdue will probably get a 4 seed, maybe a 5 seed now because they just lost to Ohio State. But I can't remember the last time a conference has been this dominant, maybe since the ACC a couple of years ago. And the ACC has kind of declined. You know, Florida State, I think, is the top team in the ACC. They're 15. They're 15 in the country. Duke's not going to – yeah, Duke's not –
struggling.
North Carolina's going to make the tournament, but I think they're only going to be an 8 or 9 seed. Duke's not even going to make the tournament this year. I think their first time since the 90s, which is crazy. But I think, you know, the tournament this year is going to be really fun, exciting to watch. But, you know, I think there's definitely – we've already seen with today or yesterday, Kansas, who's 11th in the country, and Virginia is 16th in the country. They both had to forfeit their conference tournament semifinal games due to positive COVID cases. You know, they're having the tournament all in one city this year in Indianapolis, but as soon as a team gets hit with COVID, you can't postpone games because you have 68 teams in the field. Like, so as soon as a team goes down, they're out. So you really got to be safe with COVID and stuff if you're in the tournament this year. And, you know, now you got to question if Kansas and Virginia will even be able to make it to the tournament, because I think it'll start next week or in a week and a half. You know, Kansas is a projected 3 seed. Virginia is a projected 4 seed. You know, even if they do end up competing in the tournament, neither team will be able to practice before that game. And, you know, they might have players out due to COVID. So it's definitely going to be a struggle this year. I hope it doesn't have much of an effect on the tournament itself. I don't think anything's going to get canceled. You might just have teams that will have to forfeit, but I'm really hoping nothing like that happens. I just want to see a regular NCAA tournament this year.
Yeah, I mean, you never want to win a game off of a forfeit. It always brings up those what if questions, and you always want to make the certainty of the win. So I mean, you always hope for the best for people, and those lower seeds are definitely going to hope for some positive cases, in my opinion. That's what I'd probably be thinking. But I mean, if you can pull up the upset, then you just got to go out there and ball out.
Yeah, and I think regardless, we're in for a great March Madness this year, and I'm really excited to see what awaits. So that's all we got for you guys today. Much appreciated, Diesel, for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Hope to have you on again soon. And thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you soon.